What would happen if a poor black neighborhood in South Central LA right now reinstated segregation? And what if it actually improved things, drove the crime rate down and the test scores up and improved the quality of life in general? That is the major premise of The Sellout, an extremely funny and actually kind of shocking new novel by Paul Beatty that reminded me of Joseph Heller and Kurt Vonnegut. The Guardian newspaper has just declared Paul Beatty to be the funniest writer in America, and he is here with me now. Welcome to Studio 360.
Yeah, welcome. Thanks.
In this book, frequently, you for creative narrative comic purposes, engage stereotypes. For instance, the main character, Bon Bon, he is, among other things, a farmer, a black farmer, and he grows famously good watermelons, square watermelons, and good weed. So you take these black stereotypes and sort of double down on them for comic purpose?
Yeah, that's not for comic purpose, really. It's just kind of to think about what stereotypes are, what they really mean. And yeah, for me, it's fun to just kind of like start at this base kind of level, the way that we think and the way that we perceive people, and just try to expand that, like turn that around. Like, you know, you see these 360 cameras, like just try to spin around like these things that we think are – that some people think are truths or whatever, and see past the stereotype a little bit.
Right. No, and because you go so directly into it and then sort of come out on the other side – you are not retailing it as stereotype. You're doing something different. Yeah. I would love you to read a little bit from the book, if you would.
Sure. So, the characters in the Supreme Court, he's a little high, and the justices have entered the room, and the proceedings are about to start.
And the case against him is for this thing he's done to reintroduce segregation and slavery.
Yeah, exactly. So he's kind of segregated a school. So he's in a little bit of trouble. He sort of owns a slave against his will, so he's violated a few constitutional tenets.
Yes.
So I'll start with that. The black justice moves in too close to his microphone, yelling into it, because although I'm seated only a few feet away from the bench, our differences are light years apart. He's demanding to know how it is that in this day and age, a black man can violate the hallowed principles of the 13th Amendment by owning a slave. How could I willfully ignore the 14th Amendment and argue that sometimes segregation brings people together? Like all people who believe in the system, he wants answers. He wants to believe that Shakespeare wrote all those books, that Lincoln fought the Civil War to free the slaves, and that the United States fought World War II to rescue the Jews and keep the world safe for democracy, that Jesus and the double feature are coming back. But I'm no Panglossian American. And when I did what I did, I wasn't thinking about inalienable rights, the proud history of our people. I did what worked. And since when did a little slavery and segregation ever hurt anybody? And if so, so f***ing be it.
That was Paul Beatty reading from his new novel, The Sellout. I was not surprised to read after I read this book that you've called Kurt Vonnegut an influence. Was that an early book? Did you read Kurt Vonnegut early and feel
influenced?
Yeah,
I guess. Yeah, I did. I mean, my mom had a really good library, and we never had a TV, so I read a ton of stuff. But a book that I had read when I was really young was Breakfast of Champions, and it just, it still stayed with me, you know. And it just doesn't flinch, you know. It just says what it has to say, and it's really funny, and it's really smart, and really perceptive, and. And no. I just remember really enjoying reading it.
For those people listeners who have not yet read you, it's a similar that and other Vonnegut books have a similar stylized version of reality that you do.
Yeah, I mean, it's nothing I've tried to do.
Yeah,
you know,
I understand.
But there's a lot of stuff that's just in my bones, and that's just one of them.
Was Richard Pryor an influence for you?
Oh yeah, there's absolutely no doubt. I mean, he just didn't care, you know. I mean, he cared deeply, but he didn't care whether you cared about the way he cared, if that makes any sense.
Right.
And the vulnerability, I think that's so important. Yes. It's another thing that, you know, makes us uncomfortable. And he was definitely a huge influence.
One of the characters that comes in for plenty of ridicule in this novel is this pompous intellectual named Foy Cheshire. who has published a Baudelaireized version of Huckleberry Finn called The Pejorative Free Adventures and Intellectual and Spiritual Journeys of African-American Jim and His Young Protege White Brother Huckleberry Finn as They Go in Search of the Lost Black Family Unit, which made me laugh out loud the first time I read it.
Good.
It seems in general, both in this book and stuff of yours I've read elsewhere, is that in general, whether you call it PC or anything else, pomposity and pretension and vanity are your targets.
Yeah, that's I'm glad to hear you say that, actually. Not everyone picks up on that. And that cuts across the board. And it's hard to talk about this without coming across as pompous in a weird way.
Sure. So, it's public radio. Be pompous.
No. I mean, I don't want to say never, but I have a problem with being preached at all the time.
Yeah.
And because I feel like it's infantilizing. I believe in allowing people the freedom to make mistakes and to fail. And to not live the life that you think is the way they should live, which is, I kind of, in a weird way, I guess, why the country was founded, some of the tenets.
I was going to say that what you were describing sounds like the American way.
Freedom
to think wrong and fail.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's just all words, and of course, but there's something about that I try to subscribe to. And even with my writing, you know, I try not to make it pedantic, you know.
Mm-hmm. I've read that you don't love the term African American, and I wondered why.
It's clumsy. Doesn't really roll off my tongue. It's
six
syllables. Part of it.
American. Seven syllables. Oh.
Yeah. You know, part of it is I grew up with black, and I grew up with learning how long it took to get to black. For me, black is really unifying.
Mm-hmm. You edited a book of black humor a few years ago called Hokum. And in the introduction, which was very amusing to me, you wrote about hating the earnestness of the African-American literature you were given as a kid in school and throwing away the Maya Angelou book you were assigned to read. Thinking about that, is that just what, you know, English teacher curricula does? Is it about a certain period in post-civil rights literature that is deemed acceptable? Will it end? I mean, will your children not be fed such earnest stuff necessarily?
Who knows? I don't have any kids, but hopefully it's changed. You know, I'm kind of old. You know, seventh grade is a long time ago. And, you know, hopefully there's room for fantasy and satirism and all these other kind of things in the literature that you give young people, you know, just to see this. You know, but it was really shaping this idea of, like, being black was about this experience, which not to say that it isn't, but it's about so much more, you know.
Right. Well, but you're no longer in seventh grade. And in this novel, you make a little fun of Toni Morrison and of teacher poets whose verse, you say, compares everything to jazz. Childbirth is like jazz. Muhammad Ali is like jazz. Philadelphia is like jazz, which, again, made me laugh out loud. I would think that passages like that must make you kind of, if not a pariah, your fellow black intellectuals and artists must go like, hey, what's this guy doing?
No, I think
they have a sense of humor.
People have a sense of humor.
Yeah.
And, whether this is true or not, I'd like to think that, you know, I'm making fun of myself first. And I'm often ridiculing things that I like. You know, like, I like Toni Morrison. And, you know, the book is really, in a large part, about creating space and just allowing this character just to redefine what segregation is, what this neighborhood is now. You know, just these really narrow things. And, you know, we just look at everything through these blinders. And I'm just trying to pull those back, hopefully, a little bit.
In this book, you at a certain point make fun of the way politicians and pundits these days are always calling for a national conversation about race. And write that race is hard to talk about because it's hard to talk about. What does that mean exactly?
Yeah, I don't know. But, you hear this all the time. We need to come to the table. And I'm like, what table are we talking about? And the way that we talk about this stuff, and it's not just race, you know, but this, all these shortcuts that we use. And, you know, I'm not against talking and speaking in metaphor all the time, but when it becomes a euphemism, then I have a problem.
I would think Hollywood would have sniffed around you, given that, you know, you're a funny writer. Do you have any interest in writing TV or movies?
Yeah, I think I would love to give it a shot. You know, I've, you know, done a couple little things, but it's, I realize, you know, you need to be around good people and people who say what they mean. And yeah, but yeah, it's something that I think about every now and then.
Good. But you're going to keep writing novels, I hope.
Yeah, we'll see.
Good. Paul Beatty, thank you very much.
Thanks for having me, man.
Paul Beatty's latest novel, The Sellout, is available now.